You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, episode 268. Now, listeners, I've got a very special episode for you today because it is the Brooke USA special with a rather extraordinary guest. I'm delighted to welcome a man who is on the board of directors of Brooke USA, but he is also a bit of a US equestrian legend himself, Jim Wolfe. Welcome to the show.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate the introduction. I think maybe I'm a legend in my own mind, but I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Well, we're really looking forward to talking to you about the brilliant work that Brooke USA do. And we have got a very exciting event coming up this week for you listeners, which we're going to tell you all about in a few moments. But Jim, for anybody that isn't familiar with Brooke USA, just tell us a little bit more about the charity and the work that they do.
Sure. So Brooke USA is a non-for-profit organization. We're headquartered in Lexington, Kentucky. We began operating in January of 2016, and our sister organization is Brooke UK, and they've been around for a very long time and have a great storied history. Brooke USA, basically, our mission is that we believe that animal suffering is preventable and that good animal welfare protects the livelihoods of the people that are served by these animals. It's a pretty staggering number. There are 600 million people in some of the poorest countries in the world that rely on about 100 million working horses, donkeys, and mules to make their living. In places that we work in Asia, Africa, the Middle East, the Americas, Caribbean, a lot in India. We do a lot of work in India. The welfare of these horses is critical to the well-being of the people. And I think that's the thing that really drove me to Brooke USA and their mission was that this charity, there's a lot of animal welfare charities and they're all hugely important and do great work. This is the only one I can think of that has a direct benefit to people as well in some of the poorest countries in the world. And there's also a huge women's empowerment component of this because a lot of these countries, the women are the ones that take care of the animals. So if we can teach them to do that better, they become more valuable in society. And the one thing that we did find too is that when women in these developing countries have more resources, they almost always invest it in education for their children. So it just has this amazing knock-on effect. So it really is an extraordinary charity where you can help the animals that we all love, the people in these developing countries, and women. You know, it's a great mission.
It brings it all together, doesn't it? And I think one of the things that stands out for me with Brooke USA is that it's all about long-term benefits. This isn't something that you go in and sort of try to make quick fixes. This is about making long-lasting changes. You say they're teaching their children. Actually, this is what is happening. It is going down the line through generations, we hope, so that the future is very much brighter, both from a human perspective, but also from the equine perspective as well. There is a big week coming up with Brooke USA because there is a very exciting film that is out this week, Hope's Legacy, which premieres on October 15th, which is Thursday. So if you're listening to this podcast it's going to be released Monday the 12th. It is out this week and it is all part of the Equus Film Festival. And just tell us a bit about it, Jim, because I'm going to give our listeners the overview of the film synopsis, because I mean, I'm signing myself up right now. Faced with the death of her grandmother, Lizzie must focus on caring for the farm and her horses while training for an eventing competition. When her upcoming marriage is threatened by her fiance's past love interest, Lizzie must learn to stand on her own. And with Legacy, her horse, she can certainly do it. It's directed by Douglas B. Maddox, who is massively famous and has come together. And Hope's Legacy is all about raising funds, raising awareness for Brooke USA, Jim. And people can get involved and watch it this week, can't they?
Yes, it's a great initiative. You know, in this crazy, unique time that we're living in, you know, I look at everything as an opportunity, and it's made us figure out other ways to reach people that want to help support us in our mission. And this is just a really good example, a really fun way of reaching people. I love that it ties in with eventing, which is a sport that I love. And it's part of our year-long Power of One campaign. And really the thought process behind the Power of One campaign, I mean, we're trying to raise $1 million, but what we'd really like to do ultimately is raise $1 million from 1 million people giving us $1, because we want to expand the number of people that are supporting this mission. But also there's a really important message that, you know, in these developing countries, a dollar goes a long way. You'd be amazed at what a dollar can do to support a family. So, you know, don't think that, gee, all I can do is donate a dollar, $5, $10. That'll never make a difference. It really does. And it really adds up. So that's really part of our Broke USA's Power of One year-long campaign to raise $1 million. And this is, all of the funds raised from this benefit will go towards that initiative. One of the very important things, and I'm going to be very punny here and say to sweeten the deal, is there's also for the VIP ticket purchase for $150, it includes viewing access for a household, and it also gives you the delivery of exclusive Caroline's cakes, which is one of Oprah Winfrey's favorite things, made just for Brooke USA. You get this amazing, amazing cake with the VIP ticket to watch this. So that kind of sweetens the deal, as I said before. General ticket purchases for a household are $25, but I do encourage you to do the $150 because it's worth it for the cake. These cakes are amazing.
I'm so intrigued by the cake, Jim, because obviously we don't have them in the UK, and I've been Googling them, and they look amazing.
They're pretty spectacular. They really are. Yeah. Who doesn't need to have, you know, a fantastic cake to improve your outlook, right? My 13-year-old daughter will always tell you cake's the answer, and she doesn't even know what the question is. So
I think we would get on very well, your daughter and I. It's a feel-good film in Hope's Legacy and an exclusive Caroline's cake with a VIP ticket for Hope's Legacy for the premiere, which is part of the Equus Film Festival. It is coming up the 15th and the 16th. It goes through from October 15th through to midnight Eastern time on October 16th as well. The premiere is 7 o'clock Eastern. And I believe that there is some exclusive behind the scenes content as well, including some special interviews for that VIP access. So it is well worth doing, and it's incredible cause. And you can actually, whilst you are listening to this, you can actually still access the film festival. So if you're listening in the UK, you might not be able to get one of the exclusive cakes. My heart sinks slightly at that, but you'll be able to tune in and watch the film. So go and give it a look, because it is, I think, just what we need. We're all missing going to the cinema in these very strange times. So go and give it a watch. Hope's Legacy. All of the details are available, brookeusa.org, and you can find out more and purchase your tickets. And it is going to an incredible cause. Jim, can I just go back to the Power of One and the thought of raising £1 million or $1 million, I should say, in 12 months? We've talked a lot. I mean, it seems like it's all we ever talk about these days, and coronavirus and the impact that it has had. And the impact it's had is extraordinary worldwide. Get actually that it is still really important, more important than ever, for this work to be done in these countries that are developing and are perhaps less fortunate than ourselves, because they're going to be hit just as hard by this horrendous virus and the effect that it has on fundraising.
Well, and you look at how hard, particularly some of the countries we work in, like India, are hit by this. And, you know, again, we're in a position of privilege to be able to help these people. And I think it's our duty to do it. And listen, like I said before, every little bit helps too, you know. But listen, you know, we really do provide hope to these people. And it's transformative of what happens in these communities. I know when Brooke USA and Brooke UK go into these communities around the world, and we develop relationships with these villages. But we don't just go in, as you mentioned before, and just try to throw money at the problem. It's really about education and training owners, local vets, farriers, harness makers, you know, how to maintain these horses. It's sort of the, you know, teach a man to fish and feed him forever concept. It's really transformative to these communities what this mission does, just helping them take better care of these service animals. But yeah, I mean, getting back to your point, you know, the whole world's being hit hard by this, but as is always the case, the poorest people in the world are the ones that are going to get hit hardest. And the people that are in a position that a lot of us are lucky, fortunate to be in, I think have a duty to help. And we're going to give you a really fun way to do it.
Absolutely. So listeners, if you would like to go and watch Hope's Legacy, it will be available 15th through to the 16th of October. And you can find all the information at the website. It is a brilliant course. I know I'm certainly going to be tuning in and enjoying it, because we all need a little bit of a feel-good film at this time of the year and with everything going on in the world, and it is for a brilliant cause. Jim, we'll come back on to Brooke USA a little bit later on, but we can't have you on the show and not talk a little bit about your career, because it has been an absolutely extraordinary one. You've been involved in the US equestrian team in both pure eventing, which special love, but then all the way through the other disciplines as well. I think you've been to, is it 5 Olympics, World Equestrian Games, Pan American Games, all the way through from 96 to 2014. And so we want to pick your brains on a few of those stories and a few of your highlights. Have you got any memories that stick out, especially now looking back?
Oh, yes. I have a lot of memories. Some of them I can talk about and some of them I probably shouldn't.
some of them are on the edited version.
No, it's been great. And actually, my first involvement with the games with the U.S. Equestrian Team was actually in 1992. I wasn't working for the U.S. Equestrian Team full time, but I kind of got tapped to manage the logistics of getting the eventing team there. And so I did that project, and then I came back and I went to Australia to stay with one of my really good friends, Scott Keach, who had ridden on the Australian Olympic team in the past. He rode in Seoul, Korea, and I went to ride with him and got a call to come and interview for a job with the USET to be the full-time director of eventing. Back in those days, Sally Ike, who's just a legend, a real legend, she was the director of show jumping and the director of eventing, and they decided they wanted a full-time director of eventing. So they gave me a call and asked me to come interview for the job, and I did. And of course, the next Olympics were going to be in our home country in Atlanta, and they sort of waved the flag in front of me, which always gets my attention. And it was just a great opportunity. I never intended to do it for as long as I did it, but we put together this great team with Mark Phillips as the coach and Karen Stodds as the director of, or as the chairman of selectors. And we had really good people on the eventing committee. Denny Emerson was the first chairman of the eventing committee when I first came to work. And we just had this great group that decided we were going to turn this program around. I mean, we hadn't won a medal in eventing really since the 84 Olympics, and 88 didn't go well and 92 didn't go well. It's sort of like where we are now a little bit, but there was a group that wanted to turn it around and we're really committed to doing it. And the athletes got behind the effort and we turned it around. I think, by the way, I think Eric DeVander and Jenny Autry and their group are doing a great job. And it was disappointing that they didn't get to Tokyo earlier this year, but you know, we're all hopeful they'll get there this year. I think they're going to do a great job because I think they have that same sort of positive outlook and roll up your sleeves and get her done attitude that you need to be successful on the world stage. So that's kind of how I got into it.
It was a real sort of, you say it had been a dry patch as such leading into that. We actually had Captain Mark Phillips on the Equa Ratings Eventing podcast just a few weeks ago. I've just put a sneaky plug in there for you listeners. You can go back and watch it. But he was sort of reminiscing about what was a real golden era of US eventing. Just talk us through that sort of the rise up the ranks and the particularly Atlanta being a home Olympics in 96, because it would have been an incredibly special team to be a part of.
Well, it was. I mean, there's something, there's, you know, you talk about the home court advantage, but there's also the home games disadvantage. It's very easy to get distracted when you're at a games in your own country, because you'd have a lot more friends and family around than you probably would if you were abroad, and it's easy to get caught up. But, you know, Mark just did a brilliant job as a coach. We went for 15 years where we won medals at every Pan Ams, Olympics, or World Games we went to. But it's not just, we built a program from the ground up where we really had a talent search program. We sort of focused on getting those talented riders and horses identified at the right time. And we were very fortunate too. And we had some just great horses at that time that were paired with the right riders. And I mean, you really, you know, when you're going to an Olympics or a World Games with horse rider combinations that have won badminton, won Kentucky, you know, you're not assured of a medal, but you know, we always went with the attitude that we were going to medal. We just were going to fight for the gold medal. So yeah, I mean, we were lucky in a lot of ways, but we also did some really smart things, I think. And it was just a great, like I say, it was just a great team effort. There was great atmosphere and we believed in it. We absolutely believed in what we were doing.
Is there a result that stands out for you as one of the highlights? A bit hard to pick, but is there one moment that really was special?
Well, I think winning the world championship in Jerez certainly was. I mean, that was, mm-hmm. you know, winning a major was always our goal. I mean, we won Olympic silver and bronze, and, you know, the team gold had eluded us. David, of course, won the individual gold in Sydney, was just a huge highlight as well. But I think the team world championship in Jerez was a big one. And there were just some great games. Like I was saying to someone just yesterday, one of the games I was most fond of was the Guadalajara Pan American Games. And it was just because we had such a great, listen, we swept the mat. We did so well. We won, you know, we did extremely well. But it was a great team, and that was sort of at the end of Mark's career with the U.S., coaching the U.S. team. But there's a lot to be said for chemistry, and you have mm-hmm. the right riders and the right team support staff. And, that was the other thing. We built a great team support staff. We had, you know, Brendan Furlong and Kathy Cohn and P.J. McMahon on the vet crew, and Mark Revenaugh in that mix as well. We had Steve Teachman, who I think is just the finest farrier in the world. The man's an artist and a genius. He got us through a lot of games. We just had really good support staff around what we did. You know, we had Brendan Furlong's wife, Wendy, is a great acupuncturist and a great vet. And she was there. We just had a lot of people that were the best in the world at what they did with one single goal in mind, which was to win and do it safely. We had a really good system for sending very sound horses. We had a really rigorous vet evaluation process. These horses had to go through what equates to a pre-purchase exam several times throughout the year. And we kept very detailed records on them. And we knew what was going on with the horses when we sent them. And that was hugely important.
Yeah, absolutely. And in today's sport, with three in a team in the Olympics, when we hopefully get to Tokyo next year, having sound horses is going to be even more imperative, because you can't afford for anything to go wrong and you can't risk. It's amazing talking about the team effort, and you've mentioned a few of the names there because they all play such a huge part. I've no doubt wrangling riders at the top level isn't always a straightforward job. Were there any moments that you thought, come on, it's like herding sheep, fall in line? Were there any that didn't go to plan?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of moments. I'll get back to that in a second. But one of the parts of the team that I didn't mention, and I was real remiss, we had the best group of grooms. And the grooms, listen, I started in this sport as a groom for Bruce Davidson. You know, I've shoveled. I've really learned this sport and this industry literally from the ground up. I've shoveled a lot of horse manure, but we had a great group of grooms too, and some of them what I would call, you know, real professional grooms. You know, the Max Corcorans of the world that make it a profession, and they were really important too. Yeah, wrangling the riders. I mean, you know, listen, at the end of the day, one of the things is we did have great chemistry. And overall, I have to say, these trips were a lot of hard work, but we had great fun doing them too. I think we all just really, for the most part, we all just really liked each other. And we certainly were invested in each other doing well. You know, sometimes you, when I first went to work for the U.S. Equestrian Team, I mentioned that I worked for Bruce, and he really gave him my start. And I thanked him all the time, and he was great. I was there for about 2.5 years, and it was hard work, but I learned an immense amount of stuff. And I worked a lot with Karen O'Connor. And so I think when I first took the job, there were some riders thinking, well, Jim's really going to look after Bruce and Karen and David, and that's it. And it was one of our first team trips, and I said that the bus was going to leave at 7 o'clock sharp. And we got on the bus, and Karen wasn't there. Karen is legendarily late for everything. We call it, she was Karen Lindy before she was married, and we call it Lindy time. And I said to the bus driver, okay, go on. And everyone couldn't believe that I'd left Karen behind at the hotel. Well, I knew she was probably going to do that, so I'd already arranged for a taxi to be waiting for her. So she came out of the hotel mad as a wet hen, called me on my cell phone, and was effing and bleeding all over the place. And I said, Karen, calm down. Tomorrow will be on time, and there's a taxi out in the parking lot waiting for you. But all the other riders, all the other riders said, okay, when he says we're leaving on time, he means on time. It doesn't matter if you're Karen or Bruce, he'll leave you. And that helped me with the other riders, but it also, you know, I like to think I helped get Karen more places on time than most people.
On time is 5 minutes early.
On time is 5 minutes early, 100%. You know.
There you go. I like that a lot. It is an extraordinary era of US eventing. Can I just pick your brains as well on what it was like working with Captain Mark Phillips? Because he was a legendary rider and a legendary trainer and coach as well. What was it like working alongside him?
Well, I mean, Mark's just an amazing horseman, and he's a great mind. I think the thing that people don't understand about Mark is, and Mark's become one of my best friends. I have an immense amount of respect for him. He's brilliant at figuring out how to put on the whole event, not just the cross country course. Cause he and Princess Anne organized GACM horse trials, and he's been around the organization of a lot of other events. So from a event organizer side, he's terrific. From a course designer side, he's terrific. But he was a fierce competitor. And let me tell you, we didn't have anyone on our team, Mark, Brendan, you know, Karen Side. They were fierce competitors. They wanted to win. Like, second place was not good enough. Like, we would not be happy with second place. But Mark is, you know, he was brilliant. And he, you know, he had a really tough job because you're not training these riders day in and day out. And a lot of the riders at the very top level, they have their own program. They're fiercely individualistic, and they have their own opinions, but to come in and be able to try to get them to gel as a team and to put the polish on the stone is not easy. You have to do it, and you have to have a different approach to every rider. And that was, I think, part of Mark's brilliance, was he really developed very different approach for every rider and every horse rider combination, because they don't all need the same thing. And there was no cookie cutter approach. And I think he was just brilliant at assessing that and giving the riders what they needed, telling them what they needed to hear and not what they wanted to hear. And that, you know, at the top level, you know, trying to tell Bruce that it's half past it and good enough and easy, you know, when it's Bruce Davidson you're talking to. But I think the thing that Mark came with was incredible credentials as a competitor himself, and they had his respect. And I think it all starts with respect. If you don't have that, you can't get anything done. And it's a mutual respect. I think Mark respected the riders because he really understood what was on the line for them and how hard it was to do what he was asking him to do, because he had to do it himself. That's a big
absolutely.
Difference.
You've been involved in the sport. I mean, your first Olympics was back in 92. It's changed a lot in the last 20, 30 years, the sport of eventing. What are your thoughts on the sport today compared to back in the 90s, the early 2000s? Do you prefer it now or then, or anything that you would like to see different?
Well, listen, I think it's easy to wax nostalgic and sort of say, well, back in our day, listen, it's different. I like the long format. I thought it was, you know, a true test of horsemanship. I like that you had to involve a lot of people in the actual competition because of the, you know, roads and tracks and steeplechase, and the 10-minute box was really like a NASCAR pit in the day, and that was exciting. And I thought as a groom or as a team manager, you could really help affect the outcome by managing those things really well. You know, if you ran your 10-minute box really well, which we did on the team, we had a system and we had really good stable managers and everyone knew their job. That was interesting. The sport's different, but I don't know that it's better or worse. It's just different. I think one of the things that's great is how many people follow the sport now. I mean, the crowds at badminton keep growing and Kentucky keep growing. And, you know, we put the Kentucky 3A event on NBC and a lot more people, we got a lot more outreach. We brought a lot of really good sponsors into the sport. It's grown a lot. It's all been good. It's all been good. I think the key to it has always been I've just enjoyed every step of the way, and I don't think one is better than the other. It's just different.
Just different and has evolved. One of the things you mentioned there was sort of the introduction of different sponsors and the sort of the growth of eventing in that respect. Can I ask you about the Rolex Grand Slam of eventing? Because am I right in saying that you were heavily involved in creating that back in, God, was it 1999 that it first came in?
Right. Well, it was at the same time we were making, you know, we decided to take Kentucky to a 4-star. And there were a lot of discussions about that. And one of the things that had come up in all the meetings was, you know, you can build a 4-star course, you can add the length, you can add the jumps, you can make the dressage test more testing. But if you don't have competition there, if the top riders in the world aren't there, is it really a 4-star? And so David Lindeberg and I were talking. David Lindeberg owned Wilton Fair for David O'Connor, and he was an insurance executive and a very smart guy and just a really good guy. And he and I were talking about it, and somehow the idea evolved that we should offer this prize between Badminton Kentucky and Burley that would make it give those riders in Europe a reason to come compete at Kentucky. And so we've done, Rolex was very involved with the sport, and I was working with them very closely with the Kentucky 3-day event because I was the director of eventing, and they were very involved in eventing. And so we came up with a concept. And the first year we ran it without a sponsor. And we went with David Lindeberg's help to Lloyd's of London, and we just insured it between the three organizers. I talked to Hugh Thomas and Bill Henson at Burley and Janie Atkinson at Kentucky. And we just self-insured. Well, we didn't self-insure it. We all pitched in and paid for the insurance policy for the first year. This was pre-9/11 when the insurance market went crazy. So the next year we took the concept to Rolex and they adopted the concept, and that's how the Rolex Grand Slam of Eventing was born. And of course they've now taken that concept into show jumping. They have the Grand Slam of Show Jumping, similar sort of concept. But it's only ever been won twice, of course, by, you know, Pippa Funnel at the time and Michael Young. You know, it's very difficult to win. A lot of people have come close. They've won two of the three legs. But that's what Rolex is all about, is about being the best of the best. You know, so it's really, as a property, it's performed really well. I think, you know, Rolex just at the beginning of this year renewed it for another 3 years, which was exciting. And then, of course, none of the events happened this year. So one of the things we have done, which I'll give a little shout out for, the U.S. Equestrian Federation has done a really great sort of look back at the Grand Slam, and it's going to be airing soon on their network. And it's just great old footage of Pippa and Michael Young, and also interviews with both of them, and some just, you know, for eventing fans, it'll be real sort of eye candy for them. It's great, great old footage, and really highlights Rolex commitment to the sport and their commitment to the Grand Slam of eventing.
for anybody that isn't familiar, the Rolex Grand Slam is basically another $350,000 on offer to any rider who can win Badminton, Burley, and Kentucky consecutively. So they have to win them. They can do it on different horses, but they have to win the three in a row in any order, but it has to be three in a row. Pippa Funnell did it 2003, Michael Young 2016. We've had, as you say, a few people come close. I know Andrew Hoy back in 2006, Andrew Nicholson, William Fox Pitt, Oliver Townend have all come close, but fallen just short at the final hurdle. It always adds so much excitement to the sport, and it has been a massive, massive addition as well. Jim, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about the brilliant work that Brooke USA do. And I have to say, it is amazing, because I know it's something that is very, very close to your heart and your family's heart in making a difference. How nice is it that sort of all roads have led to you've been on the board for a few years now in making a real difference through Brooke USA?
Well, I feel honored to be involved with them. And, you know, Emily Doolin, who's our executive director, she had approached me about joining the board, and it was I had just started Wolf Sports Group right before that, and I'd sort of, you know, gotten off of some other I was on some other volunteer boards of some things I really cared about, and I just, you know, I don't like doing things I can't devote enough time to, and so I kind of divested myself of those. But then she asked me to do this, and I said, oh gosh, I don't know. And then, and you know, I just started talking to her about the mission that, you know, we talked about before, and just all these components that it touched. And, you know, there are things that were really important to me. My wife, Molly Bliss, who was also a very, you know, she was on the U.S. eventing team at the first World Games. And her family are, she has a Quaker background, and they're very service oriented. And we try to raise our daughter in that same vein. And, you know, we really believe in giving back, and not just with money, but with your time. And so I thought, oh, gosh, this really does touch women's issues. It touches sustainability, animal welfare. That's important. So if I'm going to do one charity, this is the one. And I've been just so glad that I've been involved with it. It's been so rewarding. I love the other board members, and we just really do really, really great work. I'm proud of the work they do, and I'm honored to be part of it.
It is amazing work. You should be very proud, and so should everybody involved, because it does do some incredible work and sustainable work, as we keep saying. Jim, thank you so much. Listeners, don't forget that Hope's Legacy premieres this Thursday, October 15th. You can go to the website, you can buy tickets, you can watch it in the comfort of your own home. It is a feel-good family film. Everybody can sit down and watch it. If you want a VIP ticket, then there is one of those very special Caroline's cakes, which is one of Oprah's favorite things. Go and take a look at those. You can donate. It really does make all of the difference. So a big, big thank you, Chuck. And Jim, thank you so much once again for coming on and talking to us.
Well, thanks again for having me. And I do encourage people to watch Hope's Legacy. The one thing we all need right now is a little hope. So watch the film, have a great time, and enjoy the cake.
We absolutely do need a little hope. Jim, a big thank you. Just go to the website for more information. We will be back very soon with another episode of the USEA official podcast. We have got a Galway Downs preview show coming for you. It is obviously Try On, the big long format four-star towards the end of the year coming up as well. Plus, we have much more in store. So do stay tuned, and thank you very much for listening. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode. The USEA is a proud partner of Brooke USA's Films for a Cause, a virtual event premiering Hope's Legacy on October 15th at 7 p.m. on the Equus Film Channel. To purchase your tickets and alleviate the suffering of working horses, donkeys and mules, as well as the people who depend on them worldwide, please visit brookeusa.org. Tickets are $25 for general admission and $150 for VIP viewing.